before I got locked out.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Wednesday, May 1st, 2013. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 49.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of committee. Senate Bill 49A authorizes appointment of the Chief Judicial Marshal and Deputy Judicial Marshals and charges them with implementing a physical security plan of judges and staff, subjects the marshals to rules established by the Chief Justice, designates properly trained marshals as peace officers, clarifies judicial marshals are not police officers for the purposes of public employment retirement system, and declares emergency effective on passage. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Factor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Factor with the Oregon Judicial Department, the Office of the State Court Administrator, testifying in favor of Senate Bill 49, the engrossed version of the bill.
Could you have him speak up, Mr. Chair? It's obviously, he's pretty low.
We got 15.
We have a gallery.
Speakers, it's about 15 feet tall out there.
So your committee counsel did a very nice job. Again, for the record, my name is David Factor with the Oregon Judicial Department. Here testifying in favor of Senate Bill 49A. Your committee counsel did a very nice job of summarizing the bill. It continues some of the enhancements and improvements to our Office of State Court Security and Emergency Preparedness that we began last session in House Bill 4163. This bill picks up the naming protocol of judicial marshal that we'll use now in that office, which is comparable to what's used in the federal courts for the security provided by the U.S. Marshal to the U.S. federal courts. Section 1 of the bill provides that state court security purposes and policies include the physical security for the people who do business in the buildings, as well as for the structures themselves. Persons appointed as judicial marshals who last session you allowed to be trained as police officers by DPSST are also authorized to act as peace officers, subject to the personnel policies of the Oregon Judicial Department and rules established by the Chief Justice. So we intend that to be that the Chief Justice would limit the authority of these folks to act as peace officers within the context of their job in the courts where they operate, not that we're trying to establish a new police force. For example, these duties might include the authority to detain someone in a courthouse, and they would hold them until the law enforcement agency responsible in that community could respond and turn the person over to them. And the bill clearly states that persons appointed as judicial marshals are not police officers for the purposes of PERS. Section 2 of the bill again includes physical security in the plans for state court security improvement in addition. And Section 3 of the bill removes the prohibition on the use of funds from the state court facilities and security account, which is set to go into effect in the 13-15 biennium. Historically, we've used money from those funds to support staff as well as the physical security, the staff operations in that small office, the State Emergency and Preparedness Office. There's four people in that office, and historically we've used the funds for that purpose. The last session, language was introduced that prohibit the use of those funds for personnel. And we've asked that be removed from the statute, that prohibition be removed from the statute, and that we address that issue in ways and means in the context of our larger judicial department budget. We've identified that in our budget. It will be heard in our Public Safety Ways and Means Committee next week. And so there's a question about fund shifting. If we can't use the other funds for these purposes, then we'll have to backfill that with general fund at the expense of something else in our budget. So we're asking that just be heard as a ways and means issue and not be part of the substantive language of the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any question? Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close public hearing, open work session on Senate Bill 49A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 49A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves Senate Bill 49A to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And if you could mark Representative Krieger as excused, thank you.
Representative Cameron.
And Representative Hicks will carry the bill.
And Cameron.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse Cameron as well. Thank you. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 51A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 51A allows consolidation of probation violation proceedings in multiple courts, allows Chief Justice to appoint out-of-district judge as acting presiding judge upon vacancy, removes duplicative filing and dissolution cases, provides flexibility for certified court reporting program, makes other changes related to judicial administration, declares emergency effective on passage. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. As you heard, please speak up.
Will do. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm Senior Staff Counsel in the Office for the State Court Administrator. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to present Senate Bill 51A on behalf of the Oregon Judicial Department. This bill is the product of suggestions that we've received from our judges and staff on how to try to improve efficiency in the court system. I'll go through these fairly quickly, but I'm happy to give more detail and answer questions. Section 1 simplifies the process for the Chief Justice to adopt rules governing the consolidation of probation violation proceedings. The Oregon District Attorneys Association asked me to point out to you that while they'd had a problem with this section in the original bill, they support this section in the A. and Gross version of the bill. We worked with them to get the wording right on it, and of most importance to them is that before consolidation can occur in the probation violation proceedings, there needs to be agreement from each district attorney and all of the counties involved. Section 2 allows the Chief Justice to appoint a temporary presiding judge from outside of a judicial district that has a vacancy. This is meant to help those smaller judicial districts that would be left without a presiding judge if something were to happen to the current one. Section 3 removes a duplicative requirement on parties in certain family law cases. Sections 4 through 7 adjust the statute so that certified court reporters can obtain their certification through a national organization. Sections 8 and 9 give the Chief Justice more flexibility in conducting the judicial conference. Sections 10 through 11 would allow a circuit court judge to authorize a search or arrest warrant in another county if there is no judge available in that particular county. Sections 12 through 13 eliminate obsolete requirements regarding court terms. The bill came out of the Senate Judiciary Committee on a unanimous vote and the same off of the Senate floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Miller?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I guess I don't quite understand Section 14. What is the reasoning behind that? I not ever really noticed that before.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, Legislative Council often puts captions in when a bill has a variety of different subject matters in it. And when they add captions, they put Section 14 in to say that these are just captions. They don't affect the substance of the bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, please.
They don't think the legislature can figure that out?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Don't answer it. Don't answer it.
I don't work there, so I don't know.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 51A.
Well, Mr. Chair, I move 51A to the House floor with due pass recommendation.
President Olson moves Senate Bill 51A to the floor.
Excuse me, yes.
With a due pass, is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And Representative Krieger and Cameron are excused.
Representative Olson should carry that bill.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Representative Olson will carry the bill. Thank you.
Be sure to address Section 14 on the floor.
In particular.
Yeah.
You got it.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 141.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 141A is from the Secretary of State's office and adds business entities as protected person for purposes of identity theft, increases penalties for false filing false corporate documents with the Secretary of State from a Class B misdemeanor to a Class A misdemeanor requires corporations to maintain a physical presence where a registered agent can be served, allows the Secretary of State's office to verify physical address, allows Secretary of State to withdraw document filed in error within 1 year and declares emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. Mr. Threlkeld, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Peter Threlkeld. I'm the director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State's office, here to speak with you today about Senate Bill 141A. This bill is part of the Secretary of State's strategy to address a new and growing problem of business identity theft that has been popping up in other parts of the country. As states have implemented individual identity theft laws, clever thieves have started to target businesses instead. And part of that is because the laws that have been passed in other states don't offer those same protections to business entities, corporations, LLCs, those folks that are in our business community. In the last few years, several hundreds of businesses in Colorado and Georgia have been targeted by these schemes. They've been defrauded and have lost thousands, tens of thousands, in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars, and had to spend countless hours dealing with the fallout that came from having their business or corporate identity stolen. Well, we're not aware of any cases in Oregon at this time. We wanted to bring this bill forward in an attempt to get out ahead of the problem and really be proactive before it really had a chance to take root in Oregon. So some of the actions that we've taken over the last year or so, we've partnered with other states, with the National Association of Secretary of State, to create a website of information to educate and inform business owners and businesses about this problem that is available at businessidtheft.org. It's also available on the linked from the Secretary of State's website. We're also in the process of implementing an electronic notification system so that a business can subscribe and receive an email notice from us anytime a change is made to their business registration that would allow them to come in and verify if it was something that they did, their partners did, if it was legitimate, or if it's something that they may have a concern about and want to contact us and see about how to remedy that. But also it gives them an opportunity to know what's going on before somebody might be able to do something nefarious with their business identity. Specifically, the bill, as mentioned, increases the penalties for submitting false document with the Secretary of State from a Class B to a Class A misdemeanor. It allows the Secretary to reject a business filing that uses a virtual address or an anonymous mail drop for the registered agent or the principal place of business. It's a popular issue with some of the criminal organizations. They don't want to be found and would like to hide out. We actually have technology now that allows us to work with the U.S. Post Office. We'll be able to identify those types of addresses on the fly as those registrations come in, either through our online system or if we're processing a paper document received. The law also provides a streamlined process for a business or business owner or business partner to request a withdrawal or an unfiling of a document that is unauthorized. Currently, if you file a merger or a transaction with our office on your business and you change your mind, you have 1 year under law to withdraw that. But the law actually is written, it says that the person who filed it has to withdraw it. So if that person were to no longer be with the company, or in the case of business identity theft, wasn't authorized to begin with, it's a little difficult to go track them down and ask them to kindly withdraw that. We think that the business, those that are authorized with the business, ought to be able to just do that. And so the law, the bill provides for that. It also includes business entities, corporations, LLCs, under the definition of persons that are protected under Oregon's identity theft law. Those businesses currently have to comply with the law. They're just not protected under the law. There's no fiscal impact, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I guess this is directed toward you. I'm really excited at this bill, and I've been hearing how the Secretary of State's office is taking all kinds of steps to make things easier for businesses, and this is one of them that I think is so important that we don't hear very much about. And I would be happy to carry this bill, by the way. But I guess I would love to hear about other steps that the Secretary of State's office has taken to clarify what businesses should be doing and not doing, et cetera, to help businesses. And I understand that there are some steps being taken that get rid of some of the onerous requirements of businesses that are outdated and no longer necessary or viable. Would that be appropriate for this committee, or would that be more appropriate maybe for the business committee?
Probably business to hear those, I would think.
Well, I would hope that we'd get some publicity about that, because we hear a lot about what we pass in the legislature, but I think this is sort of behind the scenes that the Secretary of State's office is doing a lot, which I think the public would be glad to hear about.
Chair Barker, Representative Tomei, part of our challenge, especially in this area, is really to raise awareness. We want to make sure that, you know, a lot of businesses just aren't aware of, you know, how, you know, if you've never gone and through your business applied for credit, you may not know that you're going to go through Dun & Bradstreet and the process there, and that's really sort of the credit bureau for a business. And really, it's that need and process, and that challenge is back on us to go and help educate businesses more. That's one of the things that we want to focus on in the next biennium. I think the bill that you were speaking about is Senate Bill 142, which is actually up in the House Business Committee on Monday for a public hearing, and that's where we're looking to streamline some regulations as well.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay,
thank you. Are there any further questions? Thank you. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 141A. Open work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 141A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves Senate Bill 141A to the floor with a due pass. Are there any questions? Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Tomei will be the carrier. Representative Krieger and Cameron are excused. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 638.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 638 adopts rules for the Criminal Justice Commission. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Great. Come on up.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Craig Prinz. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, and I've handed out to Ann some written comments, a written guideline to this rule, this bill, Senate Bill 638. This is the bill that we have after each session to adopt changes in the sentencing guidelines in response to legislative changes. So these are the changes in the guidelines in response to 2011. I'm going to speak loud. I hope I'm speaking loud enough and make it short. But most of these are related to Kevin Mannix had SB 73 that was passed in November 2010, and then the Criminal Justice Commission worked with Mr. Mannix and Mr. Harkleroad to make some changes in the guidelines. This is a situation where we moved your third DUI to a level 4. It has a mandatory 90-day jail sentence, and we kept your fourth DUI, which was the law before 73, at a level 6. A bunch of these rules basically implemented that. And those are the ones that you could see in Section 1 of the bill, the new rule we adopted. We clarified that DUI there's a level 4 DUI and a level 6 DUI, so there's a 90-day jail on your third, and there's a presumptive prison on your fourth. We had felony strangulation was passed in 2011. We classified that as a person felony. And very briefly, the rest of the rules deal with that and a couple of amendments to the crime of aggravated harassment. And really, that's it, other than a Scrivener's error where on the second page of my written in ORS 213 017-0007. We had a Scrivener's error where failure to register as a sex offender was has always been a level 4 on the grid. It was erroneously at a level 6, and we fixed that. So this is just kind of the normal bill that we do each session to get all of the housekeeping rule changes in place. They have to be approved by the legislature. If they don't, they would revert back to, you know, would not carry the operative law at the end of the session. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them, and thank you.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Craig, the very end of the first page.
Yes.
What are 180 sanction units? What does that mean?
Sanction units, Mr. Chair Barker, Representative Tomei, sanction units are the way a parole or probation, well, in this case, it'd be a probation officer, the way they do ongoing small sanctions, not necessarily jail, but it would be like working or doing, you know, work release is a classic one, where they do something to sanction poor behavior, behavior that they want to modify. And so it was clarifying that when someone has a 90-day jail sentence on a DUI, that needs to be served up front, and it was clarifying that they still have all those sanction units, and these are jail and non-jail, to use afterwards. So if someone did their 90 days jail up front, as is required by the measure, we wanted to make sure if they were not doing well on the probation afterward, that the PO could work with them with some kind of sanctions to modify their behavior.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you very much for your time.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 638. Open a work session on Senate Bill 638.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 638 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves Senate Bill 638 to the floor with the due pass. Are there any questions? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Anybody like to carry the bill? I'll carry the bill. And Representatives Krieger and Cameron are excused. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 52A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 52A comes from the Oregon State Bar, requires state agencies to submit electronic copies of final orders and contested case proceedings to the Oregon State Bar to be used in the bar legal search engine, and provides exceptions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Janice Krim, please.
Members of the committee, my name is Janice Krim. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar's Administrative Law Section. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing for 35 years. I practice administrative law exclusively. I'm a former administrative law judge. This bill, as has already been indicated, and I think you have my written testimony, addresses the need to publish agency final orders in a searchable online database. Can you hear me? Good. Nobody's shaking their head, so I think I'll continue.
Yeah.
The problem that we're facing right now is that the agencies apply statutes and rules on a case-by-case basis, and those are contained in final orders. So they're crucial to understanding how an agency is going to interpret their policy and precedent, and those orders are hard to find. There's a very inefficient and a very ineffectual approach to this. I'll give you an example. If you went to a library and you had and you consider final orders the books in the library, and you asked the librarian to provide you with the play, a Shakespearean play, you believe it is, which is a character by the name of Polonius. The librarian, if this was a state agency, would say to you, we simply do not have any method of finding an order that that deals with the term Polonius. If you don't know the name of the person or some specific information that this particular agency uses to keep its orders, then you have no way of finding a particular order that deals with a particular issue. In this case, something that was said by a character by the name of Polonius. Because these are public records, they will, of course, give you, for a fee, every single play written by Shakespeare, and you can then read every single one of them and hope that maybe in the third or fourth play you will have discovered Hamlet and the character in it of Polonius. But unless you go through that laborious function of reading each and every order, that you will, that's the only way you'll ever be able to find that under most circumstances. What this bill addresses is the ability for these agencies to basically send in their data to the Oregon State Bar. The bar then provides the IT so that you can search for Polonius, or more appropriately for administrative law practitioners, a particular statute, a particular rule, a particular issue. So that's what this particular bill addresses. I can assure you that we would love to have published every final order from every agency and have a bill today to present to you to do that, but instead we had to make some very careful analysis of what kinds of orders we could actually produce. As you will see, there's a whole list of exceptions. The agencies are requested to provide all of their orders every 6 months. They don't have to present them old orders, and they don't have to present them as they do them. They basically will do a data dump twice a year, starting in January of 2014. And those orders will then be put online, and although we can't have every order, we have selected agencies and the kinds of orders that we think would be most beneficial for most practitioners to use. In other words, we look to see how helpful the particular kind of order is. Only those orders in contested cases are available, and that's what this bill is directed to. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Hicks.
It's Section 5, and you've got a lengthy list of exceptions. So can you give me an example of how this is, who does this apply to, and how is this going to be useful?
It applies to every state agency that produces final orders in contested cases. Think of contested cases as a rule of thumb, as people who have requested a hearing over an administrative decision by an agency. For instance, you apply for a license, and that would be considered, and the agency applies its policy and procedures and its precedent to that decision. If you don't like it, you can request a contested case hearing, and the agency produces a final order in a contested case. There's a lot of technical issues, but that's ballparky how you should think of a final order in a contested case. These are helpful because, as you probably realize from the amount of rules that agencies write and the amount of legislation that's produced, that how an agency would apply it on a case-by-case basis would be an important issue for people to understand and apply in upcoming decisions that they have to make as a business or as a professional. So these go into a database, and they can then be in a law library, and they can be screened in order to identify a particular issue. For instance, you'd like to know how a particular agency has applied the concept of good cause for a late hearing request, and that this search engine would be available for members of the Oregon State Bar who can then go online and use the search engine and search the database that's being created of all these agency final orders.
Thank you. So can you provide a less abstract example of, because we've excluded a lot of agencies, so
yes.
Can you just think of an agency that's actually included here, and then can you provide me an example of what kind of hearing we'd be talking about?
Sure. You're a doctor. And you are coming into state, you want to be licensed, and you want to know what kind of criteria the Oregon Medical Association Board uses to identify particular issues. And you want to know, for instance, whether or not how they define one of their rules that says you have to have a blue shirt and you have to wear it every Thursday. And do they mean blue as in turquoise? Have they considered that to be aqua? How have they actually applied that rule? And you can go back and look at every decision that agency made in this database by plugging in those words and determining how they have defined blue Aqua and what they've excluded and what they haven't excluded and how that would apply that particular individual. So, is that helpful?
And so the agency there would be the licensure board?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a wonderful bill. It's a prudent step in the right direction. One of the many reasons why I don't practice administrative law is because I've several times tried to search for administrative orders, etc. It's a nightmare. I can't believe it's 2013 and we're only now doing this.
Well, we had a pilot project that's been on board for a few years, but we've been working on it for some time, and we hope someday to not have all the exclusions from all of the orders, but right now this is, we think, is a practical solution to what we think is a very important issue. Thank you for your support. Mm-hmm.
Other questions, Representative Tomei?
Thank you. This wasn't in your testimony, but it was in Susan Graves' materials that she gave us. She said that the project cooperation by the agencies has been mixed. Do you know anything about that?
Well, as far as the bill's concerned, we worked with agencies that had some issues and concerns, and all of those were addressed in the bill, and I think we addressed them. I haven't seen that particular document that you're referring to, but our pilot project was really important because it did show where the problems were, because every agency is its own little world,
right.
and so they all keep them different ways, and so for instance, one agency just said, we're not going to provide you with any of them. It's just not something we're going to do. Other agencies, for instance, will take a document that's already in a digital form, because these are all created on word processors. Mm-hmm. They then make hard copies out of them, and then you have to pay them to turn the hard copy back into digital format.
How did they do that?
I don't know. But not every agency has access to state-of-the-art word processing. So one of the things this bill addresses is to say to them, we do not want you to go out and buy software. We want you to use whatever word processing software you use is just fine for us.
If I may, yeah. One agency was totally uncooperative. Can you tell us who that was?
I'm not sure which one Susan was particularly talking to.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Williamson.
Tell me about the list of exceptions. It seems very long.
Yes.
Are any of those agencies, were they in the pilot project and now out? Or are
no.
These? Okay.
No. I can give you sort of an overview about how we kind of considered exceptions. For instance, some agencies, like employment, for benefit cases, produces huge number of decisions, many, many, many decisions in which they're applying their rules to particular fact situations. But those rules are repetitive. Those decisions are repetitive. Reading 1,000 cases that say the same thing is not particularly helpful to practitioners who need to understand the nuances, not the broad brush. So, for instance, publishing all those employment decisions was not a choice. And if you look at the exceptions, particularly some of the amendments that we'd had from our original bill, we're addressing, for instance, the employment departments we thought had very valid concerns. We don't want to publish every unemployment benefit case, and you'll see there's an exception for that. And for the tax cases, which are important to review because they do present significant policy decisions, we weren't sure that the exclusion for default orders was sufficient enough to exclude orders where there really wasn't a contest. Nobody was challenging them. They were going to be written, and they would be a denial with nobody objecting to their particular decision. And so the employment department came to us and said, can we clarify that you don't want those orders? And we agreed that we really didn't want those orders. We wanted orders that we felt would be more informative, mm-hmm. and yet not burdensome. You will also see that there's a lot of exclusions for the Department of Human Services. That's because a lot of the orders benefit cases that they write would contain information that under our confidentiality laws would have to all be redacted. And so it was very important to us when we were presenting this bill to you and to the agencies that we not have so much burden on them to be producing a lot of orders with a lot of redaction issues. Now, granted, most software you can search and delete and, you know, delete all and they can go away, but it did take some staff time and we weren't here to make life difficult. We were here to facilitate the ability to find important agency decisions that would be helpful to people in understanding how their case, their issues would be handled by that agency.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, please.
So for some of these agencies, I'm assuming their final orders are available in another way. For example, the Public Utility Commission and some of those folks on the list, you can actually get those orders if you need them. Am I correct in that?
Every final order is a public record. There is right. Some way to get them. But what we tried to do is exclude agencies. It was our understanding. The administrative law section has an executive committee that reflects various practitioners from every area. And so we were relying on a practitioner. I don't do PUC law, so I feel inadequate in describing exactly how you'd get a PUC order. But it was my understanding from those who did practice that their concern wasn't that they couldn't find orders.
Right.
Like, I believe LUBA, for instance, publishes orders, and you'd see they're excluded. I don't practice in that area, so I can't be very specific.
I believe PUC publishes online, and Westlaw picks up some of them.
Right, and I just wanted to point that out, really, that some of these agencies actually provide this information in another searchable way.
An agency that I think is a good example of a good agency in terms of making their final orders is BOLI, and they, for instance, are not excluded and didn't ask to be excluded, and they could have been because they have another publication process, mm-hmm. but it's very mixed. Some agencies are anxious and willing to have the support, an IT support system in place that will help people find their decisions. Other agencies are less comfortable with it, and I couldn't tell you exactly what that internal thinking is for the people who are reluctant.
Hey, thank you. Any further questions? This above all, should I don't self be true. I'm going to pull on Lisa's statements here. Okay. Close the public hearing on 52A.
It's been sitting on that the whole time.
Over the work session. Over the work session. On Senate Bill 52A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 52A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves Senate Bill 52A to the floor with the due pass.
If the soundtrack can go with it, that'd be fine, too.
We'll have the band there for you that day. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Garrett, will you carry that for us? And Representative and Cameron are excused. Bill carries. Any further business, committee?
No.
We are adjourned. Thank you.